Truth Seekers, Mike Molloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Hi to all you little right-wing trolls. Glad to know you're there. Oh, God, you're so cute. From last night, the person that called in about Pelosi and the Constitution, then I got a couple of emails from folks who were trying to clear it up. I get this from Bruce in California. Mike, that guy was talking about an anonymous email. I received one, too. Bruce writes, condemning Pelosi for, quote, trying to change the Constitution by limiting free speech rights. It was written in a way that was designed to get the stupid to bob their heads up and down. And it included a link to, I think, the Washington Times, which repeated essentially the same thing. The comments on the page were just as ridiculous as the premise of the email, but it didn't stop the blogosphere from going nuts. It's really pathetic how easily people are deceived. Bruce in California. Yeah, it really is. What a sad situation to know that your fellow countrymen, there are a lot of them who are just stupid. I mean, just totally, and they're all right-wingers, they're all Republicans, just totally ignorant. This message, or this hour, is being sponsored by Donald Bogar. Thank you, Donald. Remember we were talking about the statement from Joseph Goebbels about if you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it over and over and over and over, blah, blah, blah. Truth is the greatest enemy of the state, blah, blah, blah. Well, Representative Alan West, a dumbass from Florida, is out with an op-ed this week, again, defending his claim that a number of House Democrats were actually members of the Communist Party. West writes in The Hill. Why The Hill would give this clown, this fool, space to put this garbage out is beyond me, maybe for comic relief, but he writes in The Hill, quote, my colleagues in the Congressional Progressive Caucus have taken umbrage with my equation of their ideals with those of communists. Why? Why shouldn't we have this discussion? What part of their agenda are they trying to hide? End quote. Oh, my God. What part of their agenda? Well, actually, nothing that I'm aware of. I mean, they're pretty out front. It's you filthy, stinking Republicans, Mr. West. Drummed out of the army, Mr. West. It's you stinking Republicans who are hiding your real objectives. But I digress. You remember West told a town hall meeting earlier this month that there's about 80 members of the Democrat Party who are members of the Communist Party. And he was talking about the Congressional Progressive Caucus. And now he's doubling down, claiming that his charge that are communists is accurate. Well, this guy will wind up on Glenn Beck's program. Yeah, he'll be a regular. He'll probably be the mental institution correspondent for the Glenn Beck program. That'd be nice. The Florida Republican, it says here, spends the majority of his op-ed defending his argument that progressives are simply communists by another name. Oh, my God. This is some more of what he wrote. He writes, quote, specific party affiliation is not the point of the discussion. What discussion, you clown freak? Are you having a discussion with yourself? It's not a part of the discussion. It is, rather, affiliation with a set of ideals. Do you mean ideas? Oh, well. Conservatives adhere to the ideals. Do you mean ideas? Of individual responsibility and freedom, limited government, a free market, and a strong defense. Those on the liberal left adhere to a collective ideal, directed and controlled by a centralized government to guarantee and enforce social and economic justice. Oh, we don't want justice, you half-wit. We don't want any justice. No, no. West goes on, you can call this what you wish. Are you referring to your writing? I would call it schizophrenic gibberish, but anyway, let me go back. You can call this what you wish. The esteemed scholar and author Mark Levin, esteemed, calls it statism. In our lifetime, the unpalatable and pejorative brands socialist and communist have been replaced with the more user-friendly progressive term. Ooh, you sure know how to use big words, Alan. Hot damn. Boy, I'll tell you what, you are a word-using fool, aren't you? Huh? While West continues to argue that his equating progressivism to communism is simply an exercise in examining political ideology, his big flapping mouth has brought him some consequences. I told you the other night that West was booted from the NAACP event at which he was previously set to deliver the keynote address. Why would the NAACP invite this clown to begin with? Oh, come on. Come on. NAACP inviting a fool like this guy? You can read his entire op-ed at the Hill, if you're so inclined. Big words there, Alan. Yeah, unpalatable. Pejorative. Woohoo! What else? Oh, yeah, student loans. From Lee in New York City. Mike, I sent this to the White House. I don't expect them to listen, but I know you listen, so I'm sharing this with you. To the White House, if any person in elected office challenges extension of the 3.4% student loan rate, label them as people who favor higher rates. If students should have their interest rate doubled, millionaires should have their tax rates doubled. Isn't that a way to create the next crop of millionaires? And while we are at it, we should double the tax rate on capital gains. These people get money, and they're not even working. These are the people getting benefits from society, but not contributing. Don't Republicans hate that? Didn't Mitt Romney say on the campaign trail that he is unemployed? Didn't he also pay 14% taxes on $21 million in income? Where do I get that unemployment package? We need to support college students. Yes, we do. But, of course, as Republicans have their way, the right-wingers, I shouldn't call them Republicans. The Republican Party died a long time ago. It died with the election of Ronald Reagan. It's a dead corpse, as opposed to a live corpse, Mike. It is a corpse. And it's being dragged around by people like Alan West. The student loan crisis, the student loan bubble, whatever you want to call it, it's just astonishing. There should be an immediate total forgiveness of those loans. Immediate. Somebody should get on the blower tomorrow and call all the news gathering organizations and say a decision has been made. Every student loan, even the ones for these stupid-ass online trade schools or the stupid-ass not online trade schools, you know, that charge gullible students $42,000 a year to learn how to pretend to learn how to cook or to apply roofing materials. You know what I'm talking about. Or drive a semi. All student loans should be canceled immediately, right now. And further, every single student who qualifies to go to college, who can pass just simple college entrance exams, depending on his or her expected field of study, whatever the exam is to get you into school. And if you pass it, then you should go at no cost to you. This should be something that is paid for through our taxation system. It could be paid for very simply if every filthy, stinking capitalist corporation in America would just pay its fair share.
We got. Talk Radio, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, Kathy in Maine writes, I have an ideal. Let's send Alan West to North Korea to meet some real live communists. Wouldn't Alan West wet his pants? Wouldn't Alan West just wet his bloomers if he went to meet some real communists, huh? Wouldn't they make mincemeat out of him, too? Oh, my God. Mad cow disease! Mad cow disease! I like this this headline. Where is it from? I guess it's from the Mercury News. The what is it? Not Sacramento. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. It's a great newspaper. Here's what they say. In a move that could raise new questions about food safety and result in economic setbacks to California's multi-billion dollar agricultural industry, the U.S. Department of Agriculture on Tuesday confirmed that a case of mad cow disease had been found in a dairy cow in the Central Valley. First mad cow disease ever found in California, and the first one detected in the United States since 2006. John Clifford, USDA's chief veterinary officer, said the public is not a risk. Well, okay. Now, Prairie 2 has something to say about that. Feeling a little twitchy after your last visit to the Burgerplex? Don't worry, it's just in your head. Or rather, it is in your head, and there's no cure! Actually, your chances of developing the 100% fatal variant, Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, are unlikely. The discovery of a mad cow at a rendering plant in California doesn't mean we're all going to die. If you think joining the veggie cult is the answer, far more people die every year from diseases spread by corporate-grown spinach than have ever died altogether from mad cow. Some basic facts. The actual disease only exists in sheep, but can spread to cohabitating goats. It's actually caused by a prion. This is a protein more simple than even a virus. The problem is that these prions are virtually indestructible. Not only won't cooking get rid of them, but they can exist in the environment for decades. It's not some new superbug. It was first scientifically identified in 1732, although the actual mechanism only came to light in the last 15 years, and it's still under study. The disease only exists in cows and humans from ingesting the prions, which will accumulate since they are indestructible. They kill brain cells more like a poison than an infection, and it doesn't spread to other people. Regulations have been in place for, well, centuries that kept the disease in check. Unfortunately, deregulation under Thatcher and Reagan and the rise of large corporate farming resulted in an increasing level of contamination in the UK and to a lesser degree in the US. The UK and France had several hundred human deaths. So far, no human cases have been admitted to, anyway, in the US. All that's required to end the disease is not use sheep nerve tissue as animal feed or in human food. There have been suspicious occurrences in the U.S., such as a mink farm in Wisconsin that had all its minks develop an unidentified disease, exactly like mad cow. You see, dead cows are typically used for mink food. There have been major outbreaks of wasting disease in wild deer fed bone meal to produce trophy racks. The last I heard, it doesn't seem to spread among deer like it does in sheep. The good news is that the USDA came up with a very clever DNA-based eradication program. All that is required is to test all herds, all herd rams, breeding males, and not use any that carry a certain gene that allows the disease to develop in sheep. Use female sheep. Don't spread the gene. The disease probably came off the ark with Noah, and most sheep are actually immune if they don't have the gene introduced in their offspring through breeding. Noah? Since corporations are by definition amoral, they tend to break rules to enhance profits. Somebody in California broke the rules and has been feeding contaminated nerve tissue to cows. The rendering plant where the random test turned up the disease may well have been recycling the prions back into the feed supply for years. The problem is the USDA has been testing very few samples. Some activists have claimed that the USDA has been deliberately covering up the existence of the disease, but I guess this public report disproves that claim. Either that, or it's so out of control now that somebody didn't think it wise to continue the practice. Is one of the early symptoms to mad cow disease cynicism? Prairie2.com. I love it when Prairie 2 gets all scientific. Don't you? A multi-talented man, our economic affairs correspondent, Prairie 2. Go to his website, please. We'll be right back.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Donald Bogar. Thank you, Donald. Kathy in Maine again writing, and this is this is very, very true, very excellent point of view here. Kathy writes, Mike, I also wrote the president and suggested to him that he forgive all student loan debt, just like he forgave the big banks. Forgive the big banks. And that was accomplished. But forgive student loan? Why, that's socialism. God, I hate these people. Speaking of the president, remember, in 2008, when Barack Obama was running for office, he said, quote, I'm not going to be using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on medical marijuana. Really? That was in a Rolling Stone report a couple of years ago. However, Attorney General Eric Holder then in 2010 announced that federal authorities would continue to prosecute individuals for marijuana possession, despite its legalized status in some states. The Huffington Post's Lucia Graves reported recently on subsequent enforcement activity. She writes, since then, 2010, the administration has unleashed an interagency cannabis crackdown that goes beyond anything seen under the Bush administration, with more than 100 raids, primarily on California pot dispensaries, many of them operating in full compliance with state laws. Since October 2009, the Justice Department has conducted more than 170 aggressive SWAT-style raids in 9 medical marijuana states, resulting in at least 61 federal indictments, according to data compiled by Americans for Safe Access, an advocacy group. Mm-hmm. speaking with Rolling Stone, Obama, he's a big interview, I guess, in the current issue. Obama tried to explain his original comments. He said that the recent pressure on dispensaries and providers was in line with his intent. Remember we talked about lying? He said in the Rolling Stone interview, quote, "What I specifically said was that we were not going to prioritize prosecution of persons who are using medical marijuana. I never made a commitment that somehow we were going to give carte blanche to large-scale producers and operators of marijuana. And the reason is because it's against federal law." Obama continued, "I can't nullify congressional law. I can't ask the Justice Department to say, ignore completely a federal law that's on the books. What I can say is, use your prosecutorial discretion and properly prioritize your resources to go after things that are really doing folks damage. As a consequence, there haven't been prosecutions of users of marijuana for medical purposes." Well, if those aren't weasel words, you tell me what weasel words are. Use your prosecutorial discretion and properly prioritize your resources to go after things that are really doing folks damage. Why don't you apply that to the banking industry, who has placed some of its most vicious criminals in your administration, Mr. Obama? Why don't you prosecute with no holds barred the people that have stolen trillions of dollars from Americans, stolen their savings, stolen their home equity, stolen their IRAs, stolen their mutual funds, stolen their bank accounts? Why don't you go after them, Mr. Obama, instead of people who are smoking reefer for whatever reason? But in this particular case, whether it's legit or not in terms of symptomatic relief, they are smoking it for symptomatic relief. Mr. President, I think you're a liar. I think you have outbushed Bush in so many areas, and this is one of them. Pot smokers, pot providers who have set up their businesses in complete compliance with state laws. And it doesn't make any difference anyway, does it? Not really. What do you mean, Mr. President? You can't nullify congressional law. You're not being asked to do that. I don't think anybody has asked you to nullify congressional law. You could, you know, motivate some of the Democrats in Congress to try to write a different law. But in the meantime, just leave them alone. Use your Justice Department to go after criminals. Use your Justice Department to go after people who have stolen thousands of billions of dollars from people in this country. Use your Justice Department. What have you got now? One indictment. 2 years after the Gulf oil explosion. One indictment. Wow. And that was some punk-ass engineer who deleted emails. Mr. President Obama, you sure are a good talker. You're a good speaker. I mean, even now, I can listen to your flights of rhetoric, and I just, oh, man, listen to the President of the United States. Incredible. He's got to be telling the truth, isn't he? He's got to be providing leadership, isn't he? Well, he's got to be trying to get reelected. Oh, and speaking of elections and stuff, you know, it is Wednesday night. It is church night. I'm probably going to save most of the big firepower for the third hour. But let me just put it this way. Mitt Romney and the Mormon cult will be attacked viciously. You little right-wing cockroach bloggers. Quick, turn on your machines! Because when we go after Mitt Romney and his Mormon cult later on tonight, it's going to be great fun. It is indeed. Just one little, what's the name of that planet, Kathy, or that star system that Joseph Smith is from? What's the name of it? Don't anybody email me. It's okay. It's okay. Don't email me. No, it's Scientology that says people are thetans. Kolob! K-O-L-O-B. Kolob, Kolob. Kolob, Kolaba, Kolob, Kolob.
Now that's just the planet where God lives. Jesus has his own planet. And if you get higher up enough, if you become a super elder or, you know.
Like Romney?
Yeah, you become a.
Are these places rent controlled?
I wish I knew. I bet Romney has a Cadillac elevator up there, though, on his planet, waiting for him.
Well, if they're not rent controlled, what the hell is the point?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I think you have a lot of wives and a Cadillac elevator, though. When you get to your own planet. My personal favorite is that the ancient Jews built boats and sailed to America.
Well, not all of them.
Well, no, enough of them to plant these golden tablets in.
Yeah, it's always a Jewish conspiracy. A couple of the lost tribes.
They were in Missouri, right?
No, they planted the stones.
Kansas? Somewhere in the Midwest.
No, they planted the original stuff in New England someplace.
Oh, that's right. But then the Garden of Eden's in Missouri. No.
Really?
Garden of Eden's in Missouri.
I wouldn't go that far.
No. Well, no. It is. If you believe, it's if you're a believer, and you can't pick and choose. You take it all or nothing. Oh, and God changed his mind about black people sometime in the 70s.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he decided that they were also descended from space aliens and not monkeys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. That's awfully white of them.
What's a very white God? Very American God.
Very American God.
With his own planet.
Blonde, blue-eyed. We'll be right back. For the hour, this hour has been sponsored by, and a big thank you to, Donald Bogar. Thank you, Donald. We appreciate it very much. Obama and the reefer raids, using the Justice Department for that. Lee in New York City has a better idea. Mike, what about the people who tortured and those who committed war crimes and bragged about it? Why not send the Justice Department after them? Wouldn't that be a great getting up morning if we had a president? Obviously, it's not going to be this one, unless he does it in a second term, which, yeah, I don't think that'll happen. But wouldn't it be great if we had a president who held the Bush crime family accountable and responsible for all the law-breaking that they committed, international law, American law, everything. Wouldn't that be something? And as Bob Alexander and Jude Morford and a couple other people who sent copies of Vince Bugliosi's book about indicting Bush for murder, like they found out, this little group of activists in Seattle, they bought 2,200 books. I think it was 2,200 books from the publisher at cost. I think it was $3 a piece. And they solicited donations at Bob's website, and they got enough to pay for everything and mail them out. And what they did, they went to 2,200 county prosecutors around the United States. They got Bob spent a lot of time matching the names of the dead American soldiers with where they lived, what county, in what state. And then he found out who was the prosecuting attorney in that county. And then they sat there. Bob and his wife and Jude and I think even Bob's son sat there night after night packaging up these books and sending them free with instructions how to indict a war criminal. And not one prosecutor would do it. Not one. Now, to me, that speaks volumes about how corrupt our political system has become. You have three events to me. The stopping of the vote counting on December 12th, 2000. The refusal of Nancy Pelosi to open up congressional hearings on the war crimes committed by Bush and Cheney in 2008. And then the refusal of every single county prosecutor in the United States who had reason, had perfect, Vince Bugliosi, the former prosecutor in L.A. County, I think, the guy who went after and got to the Manson family, he laid it all out for him in his book. So in 2010, when this book was making the rounds, that was the third strike. And this country is out. That was the third strike. So now we have a president, bless his heart. God, I love to hear him speak. I could just stand up and cheer. Now we have a president who has allowed Eric Holder, his attorney general, to initiate SWAT-style raids, prosecutions, arrests of people who are following state law regarding medical marijuana. And again, you know, whether or not it's medical marijuana is completely a subjective call. And it shouldn't matter. That's like this argument about homosexuality. Well, do you choose it or were you born that way? Who cares? It's none of your goddamn business, is it, right-winger? If you don't like homosexuality and you're a man, don't have sex with another man, you freak! It's really hard, isn't it? I mean, some of this stuff is just so difficult to understand for right-wingers. But I digress. Jack in Shreveport writes regarding marijuana law enforcement. He said, Mike, this is pure speculation, but it occurred to me that the president's policy for marijuana could be the result of some political deal or part of one. When asking myself with whom a deal might have been made, Big Pharma popped into mind. Weren't there some closed-door meetings held in preparation for the health care law? Just a thought. Jack in Shreveport. You know, that I don't know. I know there were a lot of closed-door meetings when the Bush crime family set up their energy policy and a map was dragged out. Well, this these oil companies will get this part of Iraq, and these other oil companies, if you will get this part of Iraq. And hold on a second. I think my heart is attacking me. Hold on just a minute. Yeah, it is. Hold on. Okay, this is what we're going to do with the invasion of Iraq. Um, Hold on a second. I need to need to contact hell. Hold on a second. Andrew! Hey, Andrew! What about these marijuana raids? You know anything about it? Damn, no answer. Andrew! Oh, well, I guess he's busy. Lawmakers in five states that have legalized medical marijuana recently wrote a letter to Obama criticizing him for a supposed contradiction on the matter and calling on the federal government, quote, not to interfere with our ability to control and regulate how medical marijuana is grown and distributed, end quote. How's that letter working out for you five states, huh? Let us know. We'll be back after the break. We'll take your phone calls. The number here is 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Think of this. Program. I got to share something with you. It was written by Charles Pierce. It's at Esquire.com on their politics blog. It's about Mitt Romney, who we're going to be talking about a lot in the next hour. Pierce writes about the fact that Romney is now the nominee for the Republican Party for president. Has he gotten all the requisite votes so far? I don't think he has the number yet, but it doesn't make any difference. What, Ron Paul, the crazy uncle in the attic, is going to make a big comeback? No. So, Charles Pierce writes the following. This is Romney. I'm Mitt Romney, bitches, and I'm all you got left. You been watching what I've been up to? I'm selling you Bible bangers so far down the river you're going to be calling from Tierra del Fuego for bus fare home. I'm stabbing you in the back so cleverly that the next time you take a drink of water, you're all going to look like lawn sprinklers. I got all I need from you snake handling tricorn-wearing bastards. I dropped a couple of million to squash all the people who take your nonsense seriously. I sang your songs. I danced your dance. I made myself into an unprincipled scoundrel, even by my own personal standards, which have always been considerate or considerable. And enough of you bought it. And I made it a point to buy enough of you that the people most likely to enact your most beloved medievalisms are piles of smoking meat by the side of the highway. And I was able to do it all because I'm Mitt Romney, bitches, and I'm glad I'm all you got left. God, you people are saps. You didn't see this coming? I pandered and I pandered. And then every night I went back to my hotel room, stuck my fingers down my throat, and then had a good laugh. You think that whole Etch-a-Sketch thing was a staff blunder? Honkies, please! Could I have signaled more clearly that your audience with me was over? Smedley, show these lovely people waving their Bibles and their rubber fetuses the door, will you? Lovely to have met you. Really, we must do this again sometime. Say, if we're all really lucky, and I've always been luckier than you poor deluded hay shakers, maybe the summer of 2015, it's a date. We have a lovely parting gift for you. Me! Haven't you goobers caught on yet? I am running for president because I am supposed to be president. That is the essence of my political philosophy. That is the basic tenet of my fundamental ideology. I should be president because I am rich and handsome, and my great-grandchildren are already financially bulletproof to the point where if my pals in the financial services industry crash the economy completely and animal hides become the medium of exchange again, well, my great-grandchildren will have more pelts than anyone else, and they will rule the world. I should be president because I should be president, and because I'm Mitt Romney, bitches, and I'm all you got left. In my world, it's my world, and y'all are just parking cars in it. Look at what I've done in the last couple of days. I spent 8 months getting you mooks to clap every time I mentioned how the current president is screwing everything up. And then yesterday, I latch onto his policies on student loans and pretend that I thought them up. I spent 8 months tickling your G-spot on brown people pouring over our borders. And then yesterday, I flirt coyly with young Rubio on his Republican version of the Dream Act. Am I on both sides of the issue? Of course I am. I can bestride every issue because I am a giant when I am standing on my piles of money. You guys were worried about my being a flip-flopper on the issues you yell about on the radio? Let me clue your sorry asses in. I never flipped. I never flopped. I'm in this for me. And whatever I needed to say to you to further the goal of becoming president because I should be president, I said. I never said I believed any of it. All I had to do was spend enough money to say it loudly enough and you jamokes would fall in line because I'm Mitt Romney, bitches, and I'm all you got left. Here's the deal. I can get up tomorrow and go right back to the way I was when I was governor of the People's Republic of Gay Marriage up there in New England. I can get up tomorrow and again and be gayer than Ted Kennedy. I can go as soft as church music on abortion or immigration or all that other stuff that gets you all so gymmed up that I had to spend a couple of million to beat a God-bothering colossal dick like Rick Santorum. I can give my speech tonight in a rainbow suit, and you'll sit there, and I'll pay you to applaud, and you'll take the money and honk like the dolphins at feeding time, because you know that you all have a price, and I know that it's pretty cheap, and because I'm Mitt Romney, bitches, and I'm all you got left! You think you're going to pick my running mate? Have you been watching the clown show I've been running the past couple of weeks? There isn't any politician in the Republican Party I can't turn into a performing seal. I've had McDonald from Virginia up the other day, and he did everything but roll over and fetch. Like I'm going to pick a guy who got famous whining to stick a probe up the hoo-haws of 51% of the population? I brought out young Rubio because you folks needed a show, and you also needed to pretend that you don't want to round up everybody who looks like Marco Rubio and is not Marco Rubio. Good. You happy now? You think I'm going to pick a young charismatic guy who makes me look as though I've already passed the audition to be the animatronic President Romney at Disney World after my term is done? As I said, honkies, please! If I want to pick boring old Rob Portman, I will. If I want to pick rookie lady Kelly Iote from New Hampshire, I will. Two New Englanders on your national ticket. Y'all going to love that, aren't you? Well, weep into your battle flags and shine up those designer mud flops, bitches, because I'm Mitt Romney, and I do what I want. And how do you like me now anyway? Great piece. Great piece. Charles Pierce, writing at Esquire.com. Mitt Romney, bitches, and I'm all you have left. Woo! Charles, you go, brother. Man.
I'm just struck by what a colossal waste of time and money all of it is.
Oh, sure.
I mean, even if Romney had just the slightest chance to defeat President Obama, just the run-up to this, I mean, how much time and you think about the money. Think of the things that could have been done with the money that was spent on this pointless primary campaign. I mean, you could have cured cancer. You could have sent,
you
know.
What's your point?
You could have sent Gingrich to the moon to start that colony.
That's true.
In the money.
That's true. You could have done that. God. But this is America Inc. This is the way politics is done in this country. Look, when Obama won the election, before he was even sworn in, there's a new book out now. And Lawrence O'Donnell was talking about on The Last Word a few minutes ago. Forget the title, forget the author. But I forget the title, I forget the author. But they made it very clear, this meeting of high-ranking Republicans, including the usual killers and thugs and bastards and right-wingers. And they decided that they were going to make life miserable for Barack Obama. They were going to do everything they could to stop anything that he attempted. And to a large extent, they've been successful. You know, for that reason alone, I would want to see Barack Obama just kick this white man's ass up around his shoulders. Mitt Romney, the Mormon on the white horse, get out of town. I'll tell you what, go ahead, Barack, go ahead, kick his ass. Thing here before you go to your phone calls, Gary Stein, the Marine who criticized Obama on Facebook, is going to have his ass kicked out of the Marine Corps. Other than honorable discharge, he was a sergeant, and his criticism of Barack Obama on Facebook called into question the Pentagon's policies about social media and its limits on the speech of active duty military personnel. Anyway, Sergeant Gary Stein will get an other than honorable discharge and lose most of his benefits for violating the policies, according to the Marine Corps. This guy served 9 years in the Corps and was disappointed by the decision, he said. He argued that he was exercising his constitutional rights to free speech. Nobody ever told you that when you enter the military, especially the Marine Corps, that you give up some of your rights of free speech, so-called, you crazy idiot? He says, I love the Corps. I love my job. I wish it wouldn't have gone this way. I'm having a hard time seeing how 15 words on Facebook could have ruined my 9-year career. Very simply, doofus, you don't insult your commander in chief. Anybody with the sense nature gave a sack full of doorknobs knows that, Sergeant. You didn't. Or were you egged on by a bunch of teabaggers who now are going to leave you out, hang out to dry, huh? Gary Creep, that's his name, K-R-E-E-P, Gary Creep. An attorney for Sergeant Stein said he would pursue administrative appeals within the Marine Corps, but anticipates the effort will fail. He said he planned to file an amended complaint in federal court. Creep said, quote, as long as he wants to pursue this, we will support him. Creep is the executive director of the United States Justice Foundation. An advocacy group. You can imagine what they advocate, right? The Marines acted after Stein stated March 1st on a Facebook page used by Marine meteorologists, quote, screw Obama, and I will not follow orders from him. Woo! No. You don't do that, halfwit. I mean, you can. He tried to amend the statement or clarify the statement later, saying he would not follow unlawful orders. Oh, I see. You forgot those three syllables, huh? Brigadier General Daniel Yu, the commanding general of the Marine Corps Recruit Depot in San Diego, said in a brief statement Wednesday that evidence supported an administrative board's recommendation to discharge Stein. Tom Umberg, a former Army colonel and military prosecutor, said Stein persisted even after he was warned. See, the teabaggers and Glenn Beck and the NRA kept egging him on. Are they going to pay for the rest of your career now, you halfwit? Umberg, who was not involved in Stein's case, said, quote, the Marine Corps gave him the opportunity to think about his actions, yet Sergeant Stein continued to undermine the chain of command. I think his purpose was to leave the Corps in a dramatic fashion in order to begin a career in talk radio or what have you, end quote. Why, of course! He'll go on Beck's program and massage his shoulders while Beck talks about World War IX. Jesus, God, these people are crazy. Umberg, the former Army colonel, said, quote, I think 99% of the soldiers and Marines currently on duty understand the duties of supporting the chain of command and understand their rights of free speech are limited. To that 1% who doesn't know the rights of free speech are limited once they take the oath, this is a loud and clear message. End quote. God, can you believe this schmuck? I mean, honest to God, he's a sergeant in the military. He understands, or he should understand. He's probably some teabag freak who decided he was going to, well, like the former prosecutor said, he wanted to go out with a splash. This would get him a lot of publicity. I'm sure somebody would jump out of the weeds and ghostwrite a book for him about his 9 years as a Marine and how it was all brought to an end because of that Kenyan in the White House, that Muslim. It's his fault. Right? Of course. And Glenn Beck will bring him on his hellish cable, or not cable, but internet thing, and get him to sit in Beck's little internet spider web that looks like the Oval Office. He tried to make... Hold on a second. What? Oh, it's hell. Hold on. What? Lord Satan, hi. Yeah, no, this is Malloy. Beck. Glenn Beck. No, he's still here. Yeah, he's still up, no, he's still here. B-E-C-K. Oh, by the way, how's Andrew? All right, talk to you later. We'll be back after the break.
Try to save. You may be wrong.
she hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
Did I mention? Yeah, I think I did. I think I mentioned that. Didn't I? 25 before the hour. Lawrence is calling from Michigan, listening on XM. Hello, Lawrence. Hello.
Mike.
Hey, Lawrence. How are you?
Yeah, Mike, I'm doing pretty good. Hey, Mike, you know, I was listening to you, and one thing I wanted to comment on, you know, being a supporter of Obama who got out and beat at the pavement to get people to vote for him, and I look at what he's doing now, and I see so many black people mesmerized by the fact that we got a black president. What I wanted to say, Mike, and please give me some feedback on this, Barack Obama is a politician. Quit looking at his color and look at him as a pure politician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we know what we're getting from Mitt Romney.
Right.
We know that. But you see, this is my beef with Barack Obama. What has he did for the inner cities, the black, the white, the disadvantage in the inner cities? I'm a product of affirmative action. I'm 54. I used to live in Atlanta, did over a decade in Atlanta. My point is this. All the money that he's raising and all the connects that he got with the millionaires and the billionaires on the left, why can't he rally these people and have them cooperate or partnership with different philanthropists throughout the country and revitalize the inner city? We don't hear him talking about revitalizing the inner city with all these millionaires and billionaire friends who support him. See, my thing is simply this. Mitt Romney represents one faction of millionaires and billionaires in this country. Obama represents another faction of millionaires and billionaires in this country. And all us poor working slobs, we caught in the middle.
Well, you got that right, Lawrence. The other thing, too, Obama... I'm not trying to defend him here on a racial basis because I don't have any right to get into this, but the threats against Obama because of his race have been just incomprehensible. I keep reading little bits and pieces around the internet about FBI and Secret Service reports that threats against his life are just out of control. Now, I think Obama understands that while he's an historic figure, because of his race, let's be real here, he's an historic figure. But he also knows he's an historic figure in the United States. And he also knows the United States is a horrifically deep in the slop racist country. And he also knows that there are millions of white people out there who would love to enter the history books as the person who offed the first black president of the United States. You know that. I know that. The Secret Service knows that. As a result of that, partly as a result of this, and I'll probably get some argument about this, but I don't care. As a result of part of that, he has stayed away from the race issue as much as he could. Look how, and by race issue, I mean inner city. We all know what that means. Urban. We all know what that means. Look at the reaction he got when all he said was a simple statement about Trayvon Martin. If I had a son, it would look like him. Duh. What the hell would he look like? White? I mean, what would he look like if Barack Obama had a son? He sure would look like Trayvon Martin. But look what happened when he made a simple, empathetic statement for those parents and for Americans who were concerned that someone gunned down a kid and is still walking free. So I'm not going to defend Obama on his policies. I'm not going to defend Obama on his mistreatment of poor folk and working folk and all of us who are trying to make it. And we're all aware that Obama does cater to and suck up to these white millionaires and billionaires. We understand that. But on the other hand, you take a look at what this man's up against. Don't forget what he's president of. He's president of the United States. And let's not forget what the United States is. It's a racist sewer. You know that a lot better than I do, Lawrence, I'm betting. Right?
You're right, Mike.
Can I get an amen?
You know you can get an amen. I give you an attaboy and everything else because you're dead on the money. And the fact is, though, but here's the flip. Everything you said, I agree with, and it's dead on the money. But it begs the question is, since Obama and all of us people that got a brain understand the facts as they are, we can't keep ducking the issues. We're going to have a real serious talk about race. Obama won't have that talk.
He can't. Lawrence, he can't. He can't have that talk. It's just like when who went to China to try to break the ice with the Chi-Coms? It was Richard Nixon, a right winger who had played the communist card all through his political career. Who was it that went to China? Nixon, a red baiting right wing Republican. Who's going to have to make the first step to have that discussion about race you're talking about? It's going to have to be a Caucasian. It cannot be an African American. It's going to have to be a Caucasian who's going to have to make that first step. I don't know who it would be. I don't know who has the power to do it. I don't know who has the understanding to do it. I don't know who has the charisma to do it. But I know this. It cannot be Barack Obama or any black man. Black folks been trying to get that conversation started. Come on, Lawrence. For 300 years, they've been trying to get that conversation started. So I hear what you're saying. I respect what you say. I don't like Obama's policies, a lot of them. Some of them I do. He is a corporatist. He is what he is. He does have these millionaire and billionaire people. He's not going to press on them to do something about the so-called inner city, or it doesn't have to be the inner city. I mean, the suburbs are hurting too. White folk, black folk, working folk, everybody has just been hammered, had the crap knocked out of them because of the Bush economy. So that's where we are. And Lawrence, I got to leave it there. I hope you call again, pal. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. There's nothing that a black man can do to initiate a conversation about this race thing that's been hanging over this country for 300 plus years. There just isn't. And like I said, there have been black folk who have tried and tried and tried and tried to get Caucasians to just sit down across the table from me. Just listen to what I have to say. Just try to walk 10 feet, not a mile, in my shoes. Try to understand. Try to take our point of view. We built this country. We have no equity stake in the country. We weren't immigrants. We were imports. Y'all brought us here. We didn't ask to come over here. Give us a break by just listening. Are you kidding me? How many Caucasians are going to do that? I would do it, but I don't have the power of a pissant. I have no power. I mean, I'll sit and listen. I've listened to that. I've had that conversation, but I'm not the president. And I'm not some white billionaire, trillionaire, quadrillionaire, you know. I'm just me. And it's a shame. Barack Obama is the president of all the people. But he has to be very careful that he doesn't let these racist bastards get the slightest purchase on him. Because if they do, then it's just going to be a horrific mess for this president. And as far as the threats against him, you know, some of them make the news. 99% of them don't. The Secret Service, the FBI, the whoever, the whatever, they don't want all this getting out. How many threats are made? How many times the White House been shot at just since this man has been president? You know where we live. You know what this culture is about. By you, I mean, you know, there's not a black person in America that doesn't get that. And there's a lot of whites who get it, too. But there's a lot of whites that don't. What's the matter with those people? Damn, we've done everything for them. Right? I just don't get it. And it's a shame. There's not a Frederick Douglass or an Al Sharpton or pick a name who can get the attention of white people. I mean, really get the attention and try to open up the dialogue that is so desperately needed in this country. Nah. You know, it's just not going to happen. And there's legitimate reasons why it should happen. There's legal reasons why it should happen. There's moral reasons why it should happen. There's ethical reasons why it should happen. There's economic reasons why that dialogue should begin. There are spiritual reasons why that dialogue should begin. There are all sorts of reasons why that dialogue should begin. But it's going to take a powerful white man or white woman to do it. It's going to take a Caucasoid to do it. Because white folks only listen to other white people. Are you kidding me? Come on. Come on. That's the curse of being Caucasian.
It's Mike Malone.
10 before the hour. Joe is in Los Angeles. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I just wanted to share something with you.
Okay.
California voter. I just got my California ballot pamphlet.
Yeah.
I look for the U.S. Senate. Person on the first line happens to be, now Mike, sit down, got to take a deep breath.
Okay.
Orly Tate.
Oh, you're kidding. Oh, my
Mike,
God.
Mike, put your hands on your monitor, feel the warmth of my sincerity as I'm telling you the truth.
Okay.
But, hey, you know, I'm also a social scientist.
Yeah.
I treat social diseases.
Yeah.
So I needed to correct you about what you said about Alvin West.
Okay.
And I'm going to use as the source a bunch of my friends here in the L.A. area who left the Soviet Union.
Okay.
Every last one of them, Mike, will tell you that there's absolutely no difference now between the Republican Party in the United States and the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, except for two words. Where Soviet communists would use the word Marx, American Republicans use the word God.
Uh-huh.
And where Soviet communists use the word Lenin, American Republicans use the word Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that what I'm saying was verified by John Huntsman over the weekend when he compared the Republican Party of the United States to the Communist Party in China with its rigid ideological structure?
Well, I missed the part with Huntsman, but I completely agree with, although I hadn't heard the comparison. To me, Soviet communism was really state fascism. And I know the terms get weird here. They're interchangeable. Communism. Marx didn't mean for communism to be a dictatorial totalitarian state. Pure communism was what a handful of Jewish immigrants did around 1920, when they moved to then, 1910, to a part of the Middle East that was still controlled by the Ottoman Empire. And they set up, I'm talking about the original kibbutzniks.
Yes.
That was the kind of communism that Marx had in mind. So Soviet communism, to me, was just another form of fascism.
Mm-hmm. But I just thought I'd share that with you because, hey, it's Alan West. who's the real communist.
Well, I agree. I absolutely...
And it's John Boehner who's the real communist.
I completely agree, Joe.
And Eric Cantor.
Eric Cantor is, boy, is he ever.
Terrapin Mitch, shall I say?
Yeah. Mitch McConnell.
I got you to laugh, Mike, and that's what counts.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Joe.
Hey, I love you, Mike, and thank you for everything you do.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. Take care. Take care. Yeah. there is a, you know, this term communist, the way it was thrown around in the 50s and blah, blah, blah. You know, Joe Stalin, and all of his successors were fascists. I mean, they just were. The type of communism that Marx wrote about in theory was not what eventually devolved from Marxist writings, Marxist teachings. But, you know, the average right-winger, like, oh, say, Alan West, has not a clue. Or if West does have a clue, it's the old story of, let me call you a pickpocket before you realize that I just picked your pocket. You know, the best defense is a good offense. And this is, I think this is what most of these right-wingers subscribe to. That's exactly what they do. Anita is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Anita.
Hello. Yeah, you're right. It's going to take someone like Donald Trump even to come out and say, I am an albino or close to albinism as you can get, and admit that the black people are the first African people, are the first people of the world, and he is the weaker of the species. And, but they're never going to admit that because they have to admit that they're the weakest of the species. And second, they're going to have to admit that they are terrified, scared to death of black people just because of the look of them. And when if you really get to know them, they're very, very sweet. But just the look of them, that's why they have to be backed by the Bible in one hand and the gun in the other.
Really?
And then they've beaten the black man down for so many years. They got him believing that wants to be equal to the white man. When that's dumbing down. You know, that's making him the weakest of the weak to where they're pimping their women and they're plucking their eyebrow waxing and stuff, you know, to be just like them. So it's going to take someone that's really feels that he's still superior than everyone else, you know, but in a very, very albino, is, you know, as white as you can be, mind and skin color, and it's going to take someone like that. Even a Dick Cheney, if Dick Cheney could come out and say something like that, admit that there's
Well, I don't even think Dick Cheney could do it, Anita. Dick Cheney tries to, in his greasy way, tries to advocate in favor of same-sex marriage or in favor of human rights, equal rights for gay folk, because, you know, because he has a lesbian daughter. But I don't know. I would recommend, here's how I recommend, a book that I read 40 years ago. Here's how I recommend. If every Caucasian in America would just read one book, it was written by a playwright named Robert Ardrey. The title of the book is African Genesis. If you just read that book, that's all you have to do, read that book. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. We're going to strip the flesh off of Mitt Romney and the Mormon cult. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. Hour three of the Molloy program. Seven past the hour is the time. So, as mentioned earlier tonight, Mitt Romney swept all five primaries last night, including Pennsylvania and New York. Da-da. So now he can go full court press against Obama and get ready to have his clock cleaned in November of this year, Romney. But still, nobody is parsing Mitt Romney's religious beliefs. This is church night on the program, so we're probably going to take a look at some of that. Romney said, after sweeping all five primaries, he insisted the upcoming campaign, his, will be about, his words, very different vision he has, different from the president for the country. Very different vision. Oh, that's a little, if you understand Romney and his relationship to his religion, that should be a little bit spooky to you. Now, how much do you know? Seriously, how much do you know, Truth Seeker, about the Mormon religion? I mean, this makes Scientology look like a kindergarten group of kids throwing mud balls at each other. I am serious as a heart attack. Prairie 2 writes, Mormons call themselves Christians. In fact, they believe they are the one true, one and only, absolutely Christian religion. So do evangelicals, though they will occasionally accept other cults that are similar to their own. If any of these one true religions were in fact an accurate representation of what some alien being really wanted to impose on us simple humans, then of course everyone else will burn. So the idea that they would get along is absurd. Without a common enemy. Romney wants to appeal to the majority of Americans that don't realize we no longer live in the 12th century. This requires convincing them that he is more liberal than Obama. Unfortunately, Obama sets that bar kind of low. But anyway, Prairie 2's comment here about Mormons call themselves Christians. Yeah, they do, but I don't know. That's kind of like, you know, American fascists calling themselves true believers in the Constitution or something. I've never paid that much attention to Mormonism. I can remember when I was about 19, 18, I was at a friend's house one day and doorbell rang and two guys were standing there. And I remember one of their names, Elder Beardall, and the other guy was Elder somebody. And they were very clean cut, Romney style young men standing there in black suits, white shirts, black ties. And they had briefcases. And the friend whose house I was at invited him in. Or my friend's parents invited him in. And they said they wanted to talk about eternity. Well, ooh, okay, come on in. Let's talk about eternity. So my friend and I immediately ran to the basement and smoked a joint. Then we came back upstairs, and these guys had started their pitch to the real adults in the house. We were not, we were adults, of course, but, you know, we were not real adults to these guys who turned out to be Mormon missionaries, you know, fulfilling their two-year mission directive. So they gave a brief synopsis of their faith and then said, could they come back and talk to the whole family? Well, the woman whose house this was said, sure, come on back. And her husband would be there and her daughter and, you know, other people. So 3 or 4 days later, they came back. And there were about 12 of us who gathered in my friend's living room. And we sat there and listened. And it was fascinating. Oh, my God, it was just fascinating, the story, the way these guys told the story. And they used those flannel boards, is that what they're called? The flannel board, you know, the easel, the board of the easel, and these little flannel characters in the backdrop and everything, like they were doing a Sunday school class for five-year-olds, which essentially is what they were doing, although the room was full of adults. So I can remember thinking after their pitch, you know, where do I sign up? I'll buy a whole set. I mean, my God, give me, I'll take the annual that comes out every year too. This is really great stuff. Because that's how it was sold, like encyclopedias. It was just amazing. Amazing! And it took a couple hours to come out of the ether. You know, they left and they said they would come back and they invited us to, the LDS church or whatever it's called in Temple, over on the other side of town, wherever it was, I don't remember. But they invited, left an invitation and said how much they enjoyed talking to us. And a couple hours later, my friend Jerry and I finally came out of the haze, this purple haze these guys had cast in that room. It was amazing. I mean, the story is you're sitting there going, what, now, the fact that we were ripped probably had something to do with it, but the other people in the room were not. You see what I'm saying? And they were as convinced as we were. But, you know, I was just sitting there going, Well, a couple hours later, you know, we finally got our senses back after, you know, I don't know. I think we went someplace and got a chocolate sundae and a couple of cheeseburgers just to try to get our blood sugar back to normal and our brains back. So I've heard the pitch. I've heard the Mormon pitch, the entire Mormon pitch, and it's really convincing if you're 19 and stoned, or if you're, you know, if you're 35 or 40 or 50 and kind of lost in the wilderness, you're sick of the blood in the Catholic Church and you're sick of the brutality in the Evangelical Protestant Church and you're sick of kind of the history of Judaism, you know, and you really want to get into worshiping something, you know, give me a golden calf, anything, you know, I want to worship something. My life is empty. I don't have something to worship. Well, the Mormons will plug that hole for you real quick. The only hope is that you come to your senses about any religion, but especially this one. This one's really crazy. There's a book out titled Unbound, Unblinded, and Redeemed, My Journey from Mormonism to Christianity. The author is a woman named Shauna Lindsay. This is a little quote from the back cover. Many people today are naively stating that Mormons are Christians. As a 30-year Mormon, I was taught that God used to be a man. I was taught that God the Father was from the star Kolob. I was taught that I was a procreated spirit sent down to earth and that I would become a god myself someday. I took blood oath covenants to give everything, even my life, to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I was taught that the Mormon Church was the stone spoken of in Daniel that was cut out of the mountain that would fill the whole world. Have you heard of the White Horse prophecy of Joseph Smith? Someday, when the United States Constitution would hang by a thread, the Mormon priesthood would rise up and take over the government. Does this sound like Christianity to you, or more like Islam? This is what Mitt Romney, John Huntsman, Glenn Beck, Orrin Hatch, Harry Reid, and many other prominent Mormons have been taught also. Well, there's that. The star Kolob, huh? But there's more here, which I will share with you when we come back.
Just believe partway. You have to believe in it all. My problem was doubting the Lord's will instead of standing tall. I can't allow myself to have any doubt. It's time to set my worries free.
The hour. we are talking here a little bit about Mormonism, since apparently Mitt Romney's not going to talk about it, other than to just give you generalizations. The media in this country are not going to bring it up forcefully for fear of being accused of religious bigotry. So, okay, we'll do it here. Dennis Michael Quinn is an historian. He has a PhD from Yale, so it would be Dr. Quinn. He has focused on the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He was a professor at Brigham Young University for 12 years until his resignation in 1988. At the time of his resignation, his work concerned church involvement with plural marriages after the 1890 manifesto, in which the practice was officially renounced. He was excommunicated from the church as one of the so-called September Six, and he is openly gay. You can check all of that by Googling Dennis Michael Quinn. He has written that early Mormonism and the magic worldview, which is something that he has written, is an exhaustive recounting of the role of 19th century New England folk magic lore, in Joseph Smith's early visions and in the development of the Book of Mormon. This book argues that Smith's early religious experiences were inextricably intermingled with ritual, supernaturalism, and white magic. Evidence is drawn from friendly first-hand sources, unfriendly first-hand sources, material artifacts, and parallels in ideas. All four sources agree that Joseph Smith, the founder of this religion, used a collection of different seer stones, S-E-E-R, seer stones, in searching for buried treasure supposedly left by pirates, Spaniards, and Native Americans. He was looking for buried treasure, you see. The evidence suggests that these same seer stones were one of the primary tools used by Smith in translating the Book of Mormon. You know, if you can't find buried treasure left there by pirates, maybe you can find
Jesus,
God, or something else. Likewise, evidence from all four categories of sources supports the idea that Joseph Smith approved of the use of rods for dowsing activities. Indeed, the first published version of an early revelation told so-and-so that a dowsing rod, referred to as a rod of nature, would serve as a means of receiving divine revelation. Other claims, including Smith's purported involvement in astrology and the idea that the Book of Mormon guardian Moroni, the angel Moroni, transformed from the form of a salamander, are less supported by evidence. Moroni was a salamander? Really? Okay. Some historians, both within and without the Mormon faith, consider this book an important contribution in understanding early Mormon history. And Quinn's supporters feel his work is groundbreaking. In a 1990 book review in Church History, a publication, the reviewer calls the book a magisterial study and a tour de force, and describes it as providing a truly stunning mass of evidence to back up its point of view. A salamander. Okay. I know that salamanders can regrow their tails because, you know, we used to have them in our elementary school classrooms, and somebody was always putting their finger on the end of the poor little thing's tail, and it would move quick, and off would come the tail, and it would grow back. But that a salamander became the guardian angel Moroni? I mean, I don't know about you, but I have a little bit of a problem with that. Salamander into angel. I'm not saying that it's not entirely possible in some whacked out, acid freaked world, but God comes from the star Kolob, and his chief messenger, Moroni, was a salamander. And Joseph Smith discovered all this while looking for buried treasure left by pirates.
I'm going to take you back to biblical times, 1823. An American man named Joe living on a farm in the Holy Land of Rochester, New York.
You mean the Mormon prophet Joseph Smith?
That's right. That young man spoke to God.
He spoke to God.
And God said, Joe, people really need to know that the Bible isn't two parts. There's a part three to the Bible, Joe. And I, God, have anointed you to dig up this part three that is buried by a tree on the hill in your backyard.
Wow, God says go to your backyard and start digging. That makes perfect sense.
Joseph Smith went up on that hill and dug where he was told. And deep in the ground, Joseph found a shining place of gold.
What are these golden plates? Who buried them here and why?
Then appeared an angel. His name was Moroni.
We're talking about Mormonism because Mitt Romney doesn't want to, and media in this country are terrified to do so for fear that they will be accused of having an anti-Mormon bias. So this is a good place to do it on Church and Island Malloy program because I have an all religions bias, especially Catholicism, as you know. But I'll tell you what, Mormonism is rapidly getting to second place here because of the fact that The whole religion was started by Joseph Smith, a convicted con artist from Palmyra, New York. Okay? He allegedly found golden plates, which he translated to become the Book of Mormon. He claimed in 18 different accounts, 18 different reasons for finding the wonderful plates, but the official church reason is that God the Father, who has a body of flesh and bones, told him that all churches were an abomination and that he, Joseph Smith, must restore the true gospel. A few years later, before completing the translation of these golden plates, but after this alleged first vision, Joseph Smith joined one of those abominable churches. Why would he do that? When someone stole his first translation, he was unable to retranslate the golden plates and instead provided a, quote, different version, end quote, because, quote, God told him to, end quote, after a 6-month-plus hiatus from translating. Now, nobody has ever seen the plates except with their spiritual eyes. Also, a single artifact or scientific evidence verifying the Book of Mormon has never been found. Oh, Joseph Smith also started his own army and declared himself king of the world, if you missed that part. Regarding women, a Mormon woman can't get into heaven unless her husband lets her in. And once there, she will get to be eternally pregnant with billions of little spirit children. Oh, man. Now, keep in mind that Mitt Romney is a prince of the church. I mean, he's one of the pillars. He's one of the honchos. And he lies all the time. He's a complete liar. Do you think Joseph Smith was a liar? Hey, I found these plates. Oh, let's see them. Oh, no, can't do that. Mitt Romney is a complete liar. He's a cultist. You know, Scientology is almost as bad. Scientology has a belief that a human is an immortal alien, an extraterrestrial spiritual being called a thetan. You're a thetan. Did you know that? You're a thetan, and you're trapped on Earth in a physical body. You're trapped. Hubbard, L. Ron Hubbard, the guy that put all that together, kind of like Joseph Smith, L. Ron Hubbard, both con artists of the highest order. Hubbard described these thetans in a space opera cosmogony. That's a story. That's a story of how the Earth was, you know, formed and stuff. Anyway, this thetan that is you has had innumerable past lives, and it is accepted in Scientology that lives preceding the thetan's arrival on Earth were lived in extraterrestrial cultures, and descriptions of these space opera incidents are seen as true events by Scientologists. Oh, wait a minute. We were talking about Mormons. This is madness. I mean, this is total, total madness. It's almost like the story of Jonah being swallowed by a whale down there with all that whale crap. And, you know, after a couple of days, he comes back out. Hey, I was in a whale! No, you weren't. I was! Or it's like Lot and Sarah, you know, fleeing from Sodom. And for some reason, some angel or some god says to Lot's wife, don't turn around and look back there. Why? Just don't. What'll happen? Don't. So she turned around and looked. She turned into a pillar of what? Salt? Why not pepper? Why not garlic? Why not sand? And what happens next is Lot's two daughters freak. I mean, they never traveled. They'd never been any place except Sodom or out in the fields, you know, bringing in the coffee harvest or whatever they did. They just saw their mom turn into a pillar of salt. So what do? They go have sex with their dad. Of course. I mean, what would you do if your mom turned into a pillar of salt and you were a maiden and you had a sister? What would you do? Well, you'd go have sex with your dad. After you got him drunk. So, you know, the space alien thing. Oh, and then there's Noah. Oh, God, don't get me started on Noah. Somehow Noah was able to bring on board that ark. I don't know. He sent his son Ham or whatever the hell their names were down to Antarctica to go down there and get some of those penguins. There's all kinds of different species. Go get some polar bears. Don't forget tsetse flies and mosquitoes and worms and And you people wonder why I'm an atheist? I wonder why you have any belief in the supernatural hog snot at all. But Mormonism, you know, put together by a convicted con artist. Now, Mormons are multi-theistic. Oh, yeah. This is why the evangelical Christians are having a bit of a problem. Mormons teach that they, and you, if you want to be a Mormon, can become God. And that Adam was a god. They also teach that Michael, the archangel, actually created the world under the direction of Elohim and Jesus. Elohim was an angel, I guess. So Michael created the world, not the Christian God. And after the earth was completed, he then became the first man to populate the earth. Oh, and that happened about 6,000 years ago. So the earth is only roughly 12 to 14,000 years old because, you know, God, Adam, Elohim, Michael, whatever, didn't start populating it. Now, who he populated with, nobody knows. So all these ancient human remains of Neanderthal and Lucy and Homo heidelbergensis and blah, 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 from 4.5 million years ago, 30,000, that proved there was no Adam, that stuff is nonsense. And Copernicus and Galileo and the other persecuted scientists that brought the dawn of truth to humankind, well, they're just condemned to hell forever. Cosmogony. That's a great word. A theory or story of the origin and development of the universe, the solar system, or the Earth-Moon system. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. A thetan. I'm a thetan. A thetan. I've had innumerable past lives. Thetan. So if you are female and you are a Mormon, eternity is going to be spent spewing little spirit children out of your body. You are to remain eternally pregnant, forever pregnant. I mean, this is just, and Mitt Romney, and don't get me started on the Mormon view of non-whites, the Mormon view of women, the Mormon view of history, the Mormon view of science, of and Mitt Romney, who is a prince of the church, he's kind of like a cardinal would be in the Catholic Church, or I don't know, very high up in the Jewish hierarchy, or Muslim religion. You know, he's not, Mitt Romney is not just a minister. He's not just a teacher or a missionary. What did I say? He is a pillar of the church. He is very important to the solidity of the church, and he thinks he's going to be president. What do you think, Truth Seeker? Are you ready? Are you ready to claim your extraterrestrial, the being that lives inside of you, trying to get out? Can you think in terms of alien? Remember the movie? Can you think in terms of something inside you? And the skittering across the floor.
And I were close as two friends could be. One thing led to another, and soon I would discover I was having really strange feelings for Steve. I thought about us on a deserted island.
Before the hour, I'm just worn out. Mormonism is really a dangerous cult. Why do you think Glenn Beck is in it? For God's sake. So all this cheesy, smiley, wearing mom jeans and running around, sticking his feet in his mouth that Mitt Romney's been doing, while the terminally brain dead in this country vote for this freak, beware. Beware, because, we've had evangelical Christians, so-called, in office before. Jimmy Carter was one. George W. Bush was one. Going back in to the early 20th century, late 19th century. And whatever damage they did was held to a minimal basis, hopefully. because of the strictures of the Constitution. But you get into Mormonism or certain other belief systems, and the Constitution is what George Bush called it, a goddamn piece of paper. Or worse, it's meaningless. It's just a means to an end, the end being this religious takeover. And don't take my word for it. I always tell you this. Don't take my word for it. Do your own damn research. Go ahead. Find out about talking salamanders and snakes and people being swallowed by whales and gold plates and the angel Moroni talking to some freak that had been convicted of crimes in Vermont or Massachusetts or some. God! I mean, don't just do something. Sit there. And if you do that, if you do, hello, is somebody calling me? Oh, my goodness, I have a phone call here. Well, what do you know? Right in the middle of the program. Oh, my goodness. I have no idea who that was, but it's awfully late to be calling me. Tom in Minnesota writes, the church industrial complex, he writes, this is a new term I've coined to explain and expose the superpower of churches, most of them tax exempt. Under the guise of a populist separation of church and state argument, the church industrial complex is a conglomerate of many church denominations, such as Catholic, Protestant, etc., which in turn, foster and promote and practice a marriage or a merger between church and state. Merger of corporation and state is fascism, according to Benito Mussolini. So merger of religious corporations and churches is also fascism of a worse kind. These religious corporations use the Establishment Clause in the U.S. Constitution to claim more autonomy from government, but at the same time, bully around government officials into doing the ecclesiastic gig or teaching the Bible in public schools, etc. So one needs to see the danger from churches or church industrial complex emerging from the religious right. Tom in Minnesota. Well, that's true, Tom, and I appreciate the warning, but I think it's much, much worse than that. We are seeing a breakdown, an attempt to return us to what historians have referred to as the Dark Ages, away from science and into this crazed religious horse crap that does nothing but enslave people. Not very optimistic. All you can do is teach your children well. Make sure that they understand what they're up against. Make sure that your kids understand that there is a empty-headed kind of attitude, a robotic acceptance of authority, ecclesiastical authority, that is starting to spread through this country. That the separation of religion and politics is nothing but an illusion. And that all of these religious cults, and they are all cults, every single one of them, some of them more vicious and bloody than others, but you have to be careful, don't you? I mean, come on. What do your children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews think? Do they really believe that someone turned into a pillar of salt, or that a whale swallowed the sky and then puked him up 3 days later, or that the Noah story, or that the first mom was a dad, or that some snake talked Eve into committing the worst kind of sin, and because of that, childbirth is painful? I mean, come on! You can't be doing this if you want a sane world to survive. Teach your children spirituality if that's your choice. But this religious nonsense, we're thetans, we're space beings living inside of a human corpse. I mean, oh my God, is it this bad? Has it gotten this bad? Has it become this crazy? Yes. Yes. And yes, it has. So, I don't know. Good luck. I hope you can handle this horrific challenge of trying to defeat and ultimately destroy religious cultism. Just again, remember what Denis Diderot said, the French philosopher, man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. Amen and amen. Eh? Dominus vobiscum. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.